Our scripture reading, Lamentations 3, verses 22 to 33. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for one to bear the yoke of youth, to sit alone in silence when the Lord has imposed it, to put one's mouth to the dust. There may yet be hope. To give one's cheek to the smiter and be filled with insults. For the Lord will not reject forever. Although he causes grief, he will have compassion according to the abundance of his steadfast love. For he does not willingly afflict or grieve anyone.
This morning's Old Testament scripture is 2 Samuel. Chapter 1, verse 1, and then verses 17 through 27. After the death of Saul, when David had returned from defeating the Amalekites, David remained 2 days in Ziklag. David intoned his lamentation over Saul and his son Jonathan. He ordered that the song of the bow be taught to the people of Judah. It is written in the book of Jashar, and he said, "Your glory, O Israel, lies slain upon your high places. How the mighty have fallen! Tell it not in Gath. Proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon, or the daughters of the Philistines will rejoice. The daughters of the uncircumcised will exult. You mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew or rain upon you, nor bounteous fields, nor there the shield of the mighty, for there the shield of the mighty was defiled, the shield of Saul, anointed with oil no more. For the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back, nor the sword of Saul return empty. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely, in life and in death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in crimson and luxury, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan lies slain upon your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan, greatly beloved for you to me. Your love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How the mighty have fallen, and the weapons of war perished. May God bless and lend understanding to the reading of his word." One can see why David would feel bad losing his best friend and want to mourn that. More puzzling is how David mourns the death of Saul. One would not have blamed David for kind of rejoicing at the death of King Saul. For years, King Saul had pursued David, trying to capture him with the intent of killing him. And now the tables had turned. David was alive and Saul himself was dead. We would understand it, and we'd have plenty of literary precedent where people could rejoice that the enemy was finally defeated and gone. We could see how, at the very least, he'd be relieved to no longer have to be running through the countryside, hiding in caves, because Saul and Saul's soldiers were trying to catch him and kill him. Instead, he's had none of that. Instead, he mourns. He cried, "How the mighty have fallen." As I preached a few weeks ago, God warned Israel What would happen if they chose to have a king in their efforts to emulate their neighbors? The neighboring nations all had kings. We need one too, they thought. And God warned them about it, but eventually God was unable to convince the people that this is what they needed, that they needed something other than a king. Having tried to warn them, God finally decided the best thing to do was to humor them. And so God humored them by giving them the perfect king, Saul. Saul was tall. Saul was handsome. Saul came from a well-to-do family. He had a very king-like bearing. He was someone who fits the description of what, even to this day, what we would call a king. We expect our kings to look handsome and tall and powerful. And really, his tenure at royalty started off pretty well, but eventually Saul didn't have the one thing that God was looking for in a king, and that was obedience to God, a heart for God. So Saul started disobeying God when he thought it was convenient. See, that's really what sin is anyway. Sin is always a good idea. It's just not God's idea. It always seems like, oh, this is the right thing to do. And that's how Saul acted, like he knew better than God. And so he did what he wanted. And eventually everything went off the rails. When he decided the best thing for him was to catch David and kill him. Samuel had anointed David, by the way. You know, even before David became king, Samuel was led out to David's home and anointed David. And yet here Saul was pursuing him as if he was some kind of a fugitive. And David at first, I think, was conflicted. He didn't know how to feel. He felt a certain family connection. David had married Saul's daughter. So this was his father-in-law that was chasing him down. And I'm sure my father-in-law a time or two would have wished for my demise. And with his skill with a gun, I'm sure he could have accomplished that task had he wanted to. But I always trusted that he wouldn't kill me. It might make me feel terrible, but he wouldn't kill me. David didn't have such a privilege. And Saul broke David's trust. And then the casual reader can see just how conflicted David feels as he's running. At one point, he gets the chance to kill Saul himself, and he can't do it. He feels this is God's anointed, and so he gives him a little hint. He snips a little clothing off of Saul's garment just to say, I could have killed you, but I didn't do it. Just to let him know, I won't do this. I'm on your side. But that doesn't change. Eventually, Saul's heart just keeps going back to hatred and pursuit. And when Saul finally dies, David mourns him, which just seems inexplicable. Jonathan is another story. He had a very close friendship with Saul's son, Jonathan. And he certainly, that added to his sense of ambivalence as he was being pursued. But you know, Jonathan knew who was right and who was wrong. He helped David in countless ways to stay alive, even as his dad's soldiers were trying to catch him. Conflict drains energy from any system, and the Israelites were given one task, and that was to drive the foreign people out of their land. That was their job. And David, he had a high position there. He was head of the army. And so it was his job to fight people like the Philistines. And how does one do that? How do you fight somebody while you're being pursued by the people that are supposed to be helping you? But David was still successful. One chant throughout the land, everybody heard this and said it, was that Saul has killed thousands. David has killed tens of thousands. And that really stuck in Saul's craw. His ego was bruised. I'm the king. He kills more people than I do. He kills more of their enemies than I do. Perhaps a clue of why that happens is you're trying to pursue David instead of trying to do your job as king and drive out the enemies among you. But Saul chose instead to have his ego bruised. And he had all those soldiers go after David. Not the Philistines, David. The pursuit lasted for a long time. I'm sure in David's mind it lasted a really long time. But eventually God delivered, and so we read Psalm 30 this morning. And David's appreciation that he could have died here, and yet he lived. To you, O Lord, I cried, and to the Lord I made supplication. What profit is there in my death if I go down to the pit? Will the dust praise you? Will it tell of your faithfulness? Hear, O Lord, and be gracious to me. O Lord, be my helper. But when Saul finally died, by any expectation, we would expect David would be relieved. In fact, he could have gone so far as the Munchkins did, singing, "Ding dong, the witch is dead." Could sing, here's what he could sing, "Ding dong, Saul is gone, I can be king now, from now on. Ding dong, the wicked Saul is gone." I hope I didn't infringe any copyright by singing that. The movie's like almost 90 years old. Am I going to get in trouble for that? Oh my goodness. But he didn't have such a song to sing. In fact, he didn't rejoice at all. He became like somebody who just lost his best friend, which he had, but also mourned his best friend's father. And instead of "ding dong, the witch is dead," he writes this, "Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely. In life and in death, they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you with crimson and luxury, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Why would he have such gracious memories for a man whose whole purpose at the end was to dance on your grave?" Scriptures describe David as a man after God's own heart. In other words, David sought with his life to find out what God was thinking. What does God feel? What is it like to have the heart of God? And David thought, I want that. In his imperfect human way, he wanted to have the heart of God. And David's time of mourning when Saul, his enemy, dies, might give us a clue how God feels when humans falter. Saul was tall at the start of his kingdom. He was tall and handsome. And he was king for 40 years, so that means he's no slouch to rule anywhere for 40 years. God makes the beautiful and strong. And then time and circumstances wear us down until we no longer are what we were. That happens to the mightiest warrior, to the most glorious supermodel, to doctors, business leaders, teachers, nurses, even pastors. I suppose plumbers spring a leak eventually. Electricians lose their spark. But on bumps. All of us lose a step. And that's just the consequences of life on Earth, of gravity weighing down our bodies, of age and decay that comes to all of us, of mortality that's on its way. Particularly tragic is when a person self-destructs, as is the case of Saul. Saul, though mighty, chose to fill his heart with hate, and eventually he ended up falling on his own sword, taking his own life. And that makes the tragedy that much more profound. This didn't have to end this way. And David had that sense of just what was lost here, how much tragedy there is in the death of even his enemy. David mourned because one of God's greatest human creations had self-destructed in such a tragic way. And David could also, as we all should, look over the precipice and see his own mortality ahead. Just because he had eluded Saul's pursuit, just because he had dodged, well, he didn't dodge a bullet because they didn't have bullets, he dodged an arrow this time. But he couldn't pretend that he was going to live forever. And David himself was a man after God's own heart. And maybe he's giving us a clue how God feels when the mighty fall. When we fall, or when others fall around us, God mourns right there with us. The death of someone you hate is no triumph, it's no victory. The death of someone who hates others is no good thing to celebrate. God, who wills that we should all love each other, God, who has eternity under control, God, who has unlimited time, might take some time to mourn the glorious people made in God's image, who age and die. God may mourn those who hasten their decline by dissipating their energies with hatred and conflict. God mourns perhaps most of all those who self-destruct. Picture God like David, sad, looking at what's happened and what could have been. I picture God crying how the mighty have fallen.